folks, welcome to the Robert Sword Podcast. Today I'm joined by author Steve Umstead, who has been the owner of a Caribbean and Mexican travel company for the past 10 years. But according to his bio, he never forgot his lifelong dream of becoming an author. After a successful stab at National Novel Writing Month, he decided to pursue his dream more vigorously, and he hasn't given up the traveling. Steve, first of all, thanks for being here today.
Appreciate it, Robert. My pleasure.
You and I, we're both writers, obviously, but we kind of do different circles. You're more in the science fiction sector. I'm more in like the thriller horror sector. How are things over there in the self-published science fiction sector?
It's a lot of fun. Ran into many, many great people, especially in the science fiction corner, including some quite successful people. Michael Hicks, as a matter of fact, is somebody I ran into maybe about a year ago, and he's been extremely successful and as a self-published science fiction author. So he's been somebody that I have communicated with on a regular basis and really look up to in some of what he does. And, it's the non-romance, non-erotica type of thing that you're probably running into as well. It's just, it's a decent niche and, having a lot of fun doing it.
I found that at least with the horror, at least on terms of Amazon, if you look at the genre top 100, the top 100 in horror, you could have a book probably in like the 4,000 range ranking and be in the top 100. But yet in the thriller market, I think you have to crack maybe like 900 to manage to be in the top 100. How is it over in the science fiction side?
Very similar to the horror. It's that off... that the shelf in your bookstore that's a little bit in the corner, the horror and the science fiction are a little bit outside the normal mainstream of a thriller or an adventure or some of the typical very popular type of genres. So I would say it's very similar in terms of to crack the top 100. You're going to be in the 4-digit range as opposed to the 5-digit range.
Let's give a quick background on how we know each other. It's not a typical online writer friendship. Do you want to kind of talk about?
Sure. Okay. It was Stacy Cochran, I think, who quite a while ago, maybe February or March of last year of 2011, just when I'd first gotten one book out, had invited me on to some type of radio show, and then he had an alternate to the Kindle boards. I forget what it was called, Kindle Chat, maybe something along those lines. And on those boards, it was a very small population of people that were using it. And I was among maybe 150 or 200 people tops. And some of the comments in the forums, back and forth. And I saw this book called No Shelter. And it actually turned out to be my first ebook purchase. I had gotten copies through other methods prior to becoming an author and reading them on my iPhone several years ago, but that was my first purchase because I downloaded the symbol or the sample for my Kindle app, and I read it one night, and I burned through the sample and I bought it immediately right through the app, and I thought, what a great book this was. And it turns out that the author, a lovely young lady named Z. Constance Frost, who if I recall, I did ask that person, what should I call you, Z or Constance? We struck up a conversation that was the author, and she was on the forums, and I complimented the book. And I think one of the more ironic comments I made to this person was that you should probably get on Twitter because there's a lot of people out there just like us that you could talk to. Little did I know that 6 or 8 months later, it turns out that Z. Constance Frost, who had had several interviews back and forth with you, which I thought was the comedic part of all this, are one and the same person. So you wrote No Shelter, which I thought was still one of my favorite reads of 2011.
Well, thank you.
Under a pseudonym for Z. Constance Frost. I don't know where that name came from. But that person that I suggested get on Twitter and followed her interviews with Robert often, it turns out to be you. So that was how we first started talking to each other. Very interesting way to kick things off, I guess.
it was definitely different. Real quick aside, I mean, the reason I was doing it was kind of an experiment, because the great thing about digital publishing is, you can create a whole persona. But I think it just became too much. I mean, so I think it's hard enough to market yourself, let alone market a second person. So to try to kind of keep up with it, it was way too much. And I realized sales were not really good for that first book. And I was like, okay, screw this. I'm just going to kind of out myself.
Branding is actually very important in what we do. You, me, everyone who's out there is a brand. So when you've split that brand, it's tough to A, maintain both, and B, to be successful in both. So I could see exactly what the, you know, your issue was after a while on that.
No, and that's a very good point. I mean, like right now, your trilogy of the Evan Gabriel books, they are science fiction. If you were to write something more mystery, you know, straight up mystery or just straight up horror, would you use your own name?
I would. I don't. Again, it goes back to that branding thing, and I think that there's nothing wrong with an author going outside of his normal genre. Now, if I were to write erotica or children's books, I would probably consider doing that. But if I went into thriller or horror or mystery or suspense, I would absolutely use my own name because I think that, you know, I've had these books out there for, you know, book one came out about 16 months ago, and now there are four titles out, including the prequel. So that I've got a decent audience. I would think I'd want to capitalize on that if I put something else out outside of the genre. I think my writing style would still come through, regardless of the subject matter. But again, if it's a very risque subject matter or a subject matter that's going to appeal to a completely different audience, I would consider it.
Last month, we had a little Google Plus chat. It was you, me, Griffin Hayes, and Joe Hart. And it was basically just four writers just talking about, you know, writing and publishing. And some really secret stuff, which we can't divulge to anybody else. The one thing that was mentioned in there was that you were basically walking away from Smashwords and going directly to the iTunes bookstore.
I did? Yes, of course I did.
Okay, yes. Well, and then what struck me that is, I don't know, I have a love-hate relationship with Smashwords right now. I think what they, you know, what they stand for and what they did initially was really great. They were giving a place to writers to just publish through. At the same time, I don't like the fact that I lose control. Whereas going through the different channels, you know, through Smashwords, then they kind of can distribute to different places. If you make a change, it could be a week before they make that change in, say, the Sony bookstore. It can be like a month or two. In fact, right now, the changes are so long in the Sony bookstore that I'm trying to get my books out of there just because, you know, they're priced at a certain price. So now if I'm trying to start to raise some of my prices, you know, places like Amazon are going to match that Sony price.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I just don't like the fact that I lose control. But, I kind of, when you were talking about it, is that you had already jumped the ship and you pretty much had left Smashwords, correct?
Yes, for many, many reasons. Yours is a perfect example of how it's so difficult to work with them. Now, Smashwords, from day one, Mark Coker has a great idea and a great platform, and he enabled thousands upon thousands of authors to get their work out there right away. And more power to him. It was a wonderful, wonderful idea. It just has so many limitations that it's nearly impossible to get around them. I'm not comfortable with the whole meat grinder. I like to see my actual EPUB or MOBI file and know that it's going to look just like that when it gets to someone. You know, the meat grinder is nice that you can upload a Word doc and it creates those things, but it doesn't create them perfectly. It doesn't put maybe the table of contents where it should go. Another formatting issue is the description of the book when it shows up in one of those third-party Sony or Kobo or iBooks. The description, I've seen them, they all run together with no spacing or you know, line breaks.
Aren't they supposed to make it possible to upload an EPUB file? But wasn't there word in the past that they were working on that?
I think so. I think I'd seen part of Coker's blog maybe a couple of months ago about starting to accept you know, finished EPUBs as opposed to just the Word doc, which would be great. I mean, that's a step in the right direction. Yeah. But that's one of the least issues I have with Smashwords. The time issue that you mentioned is excruciating because it takes so long. I mean, with Amazon, with Kindle, the KDP system, a price change will be same day. With Pubit, with Barnes & Noble, oddly enough, they'll do it within an hour. I'll see my price change. if I've got a price out there, just like you said, if I change a price on Amazon and they keep price matching the thing that's out there on the Kobo store that will take 30 to 40 days for Smashwords to push through to, that's killing me. I just hate having that. And Smashwords is a great entry into those markets, iBooks, Kobo, Sony, and Diesel. Kobo, I'm now, I guess, on a waiting list for the direct.
At the end of the month, from what I understand.
And iBooks, I'm now direct. So the only thing I'm using Smashwords for right now are Sony and Diesel, which are very tertiary markets. I can't even say secondary markets at this point.
Do you even have any sales to Diesel? I don't know anybody. Last on the program I had last was a Joseph Dagnese, and he claims that he had two sales. And I told him he was probably the only person I know who has ever sold anything through Diesel.
I had two sales. Now, they come in, who knows when the reporting happens. I think it's quarterly. But sometime in the last week on my Smashwords report, when I skimmed through there, I saw two purple lines and I went, what's that? Diesel eBooks.
Wow.
That is shocking. It's really shocking.
Yeah, personally, I don't see I don't know anybody who has a Sony e-reader. I kind of feel that, you know, despite the fact that Sony was basically the ones who first came out with the e-readers, they are going to be on their way out. I really see no reason to kind of keep books in there just for, you know, one or two sales every year.
No, I mean, the Kobo, I think, is a very viable platform with the purchase by the Japanese company, and they're very big in Canada. So I think that's a very, very viable platform. I think that's fourth after the other three. The other thing with Smashwords is it's more of a distribution system. But what it is nobody goes to – and I've had this discussion on someone else's interview once way back when, a friend of mine. And it's that whole thing that goes back to an author. Where do you want to sell your books? Who do you want to sell your books to? And why do most self-published authors end up selling 100 books and be done? That's the number that's out there. You sell 100 books, and you'll never sell another one the rest of your life. Because my feeling is that self-published authors, they know no one else out there except other self-published authors. And that's the group that everyone is in.
Yes.
And I see all kinds of self-published authors. Whenever I see someone send out a tweet or a Facebook or a Google Plus post that says, check out my books at Smashwords, I think, don't send links to Smashwords. The only people that shop at Smashwords are other authors. If you're going to take time to put out a marketing message to sell your book, direct people to a site where they can buy it. Try to find those readers, because readers don't use Smashwords. Authors buy books. I understand that. But they're not the target market. And I think that once you sell to those 100 author friends that you have and you're done, that seems to be the typical thing. So to find a reader, don't send them to Smashwords, because I know I can't even imagine telling my mother with her Kindle to go to Smashwords, log in, download the file, plug in your Kindle, drag the file over, unplug the Kindle, and then launch it, and your book should be there. No, they want to go on their Kindle, or they want to go to Amazon.com and buy the book. That's where the readers go. So I see a lot of authors sending people to Smashwords, and I think you're only sending other authors there. I don't think that's a viable outlet for people to go shopping at.
Well, not only that, and this is something I come back to again and again. Well, for as much as people hate, for as much as writers hate Amazon and they want to, like, you know, talk bad about Amazon, Amazon is where the readers are at. That is where you're going to actually find true readers. You're not, you Absolutely. Aren't just going to find, you know, on the Kindle boards or other message boards, they're going to be writers. You know, writers, again, yes, writers are readers, but at the same time, they're not true readers. And I find that most of my readers, you know, are from Amazon. You know, it's not stuff that I like. It's nothing that I put on Twitter. It's nothing I put on Facebook or I put on my own website. It's just the book is there on Amazon. A reader finds it and, you know, they buy it and they read it. That's it. So it almost seems like, you know, like this podcast here, you know, the fact that we're on Twitter, the fact that we have all these different social networks. Yeah, we are interacting with a few readers, but at the same time, we're mostly just interacting with other writers.
That's very true. And I think that's the trap that a lot of authors fall into. Is they can't find the readers. And I think that, I mean, you'll never see me send out a tweet that says, you know, buy my books on Smashwords. It's just not worth it, because I know that a lot of authors follow me on Twitter. A lot of readers follow me on Twitter. So I'm not going to send anybody to Smashwords.
Actually, while we're talking about Amazon, I want to talk about this one article here. And I have it linked here on the website, which is from the Daily Mail, and which is over in the UK. It says, online books giant Amazon profits from ebooks on terror, hate, and violence. Basically, the article starts with, Amazon has been accused of making money selling offensive, racist, and potentially dangerous ebooks on subjects ranging from bomb-making to drug-growing. The internet giant sells a vast number of ebooks downloaded by readers from its website, some as little as £1. It allows anyone to upload an ebook for sale without safeguards against content that would be refused by traditional publishers. And it says, examples include anti-Semitic prose, instructions on growing marijuana novels, which apparently glorify dogfighting. And it goes on and on and on. What are your thoughts on the on this article in particular?
Well, it's easy to go after the big guy. Amazon is the big guy out there now, and they always seem to be the target of the misguided complaints, I should say, because like you say, the readers are on Amazon, and if it wasn't for Jeff Bezos 6 or 7 years ago with the vision of a Kindle, none of us would be talking about this right now. So I've got a lot of things to thank Amazon for. I'm not a big fan of the big guy either, but I think that it's just easy to put out a broad statement like that saying Amazon allows this and they're profiting from this. I don't know if we want to go in this direction, but I had a thought. But good. I knew you were going to say something there.
Well, I just was talking about the whole going after, you know, Authors Guild. I think it was today released another of their one long-winded letters about the whole Department of Justice lawsuit. And in it, they basically argue that Amazon's approach, and this was like, you know, quote for quote, their approach to destroying competition is sophisticated, data-driven, and endlessly creative. And I don't know. For me, I kind of felt that they're basically saying Amazon makes better business decisions than publishers right. and booksellers, and it's not fair.
They're too good. We don't like them.
Exactly. And it's just kind of like this is from the Authors Guild. I mean, they're supposed to be this, you know, highly professional organization, and they just come across as a bunch of whiners, at least in my opinion.
Is that why no one likes the New York Yankees or the Dallas Cowboys? It's because they have owners that will do whatever they can to win, and they have a better product. It's just easy. The big guy.
Yeah, and then, you know, I don't know. The whole thing with Richard Russo, who apparently, did you hear, I guess his he's been one of the best-selling authors who's been very outspoken about Amazon. I guess because his daughter has a bookstore. So he probably hears his daughter talk about how sales are in decline at bookstores. And apparently his next novel, he's going to make it just a book, no ebook.
Right.
And I guess this is his way of saving his daughter's career. I have no idea. I think in many ways you're alienating readers here. I mean, it's proven. Wasn't it earlier in the month that ebook sales surpassed hardcover?
Yes, and last year they were surpassing the paperbacks, I believe, right? It's just a wave that's going to continue to roll. There's really no way around it. Now, is paper still viable? Absolutely it is. But I think that the distribution of ebooks is so much easier, less expensive, and it's easier to get in people's hands, that it's a no-brainer at this point that that's the direction everything's going. And I think that, again, the big guy, we're all scared of Amazon. We're all scared of Apple if they decide to step into this. They're obviously being sued as well. So I don't see any problem with a company that's successful. And like you said, that's where the readers are. They've done a great job in putting themselves out there as, we are the best distributor of ebooks. Come to us. So as an author, that's where I'm going. You and I both know that that's where the bulk of our sales come from.
Oh, definitely. Probably 95% for me.
Yeah, mine has shifted. I was probably over 90, but in the past 3 or 4 months, I've had very good Barnes & Noble sales. Can't even imagine why, but they're increasing every month since January.
Well, you and I had talked about this. You think it's because basically the Kindle Select program.
I think it had something to do with it, because I saw a change in my book sales starting in December, and it had gone up 40 to 50% every month since then. And I think a lot of it had to do with a lot of authors pulled their books, and there were less competition on BarnesandNoble.com for ebooks in my genre. So I had less people to compete with, less thumbnails that people had to scroll through to find my book. I think that had something to do with it. Not all of it, but...
You were going to talk about with the Amazon, that article?
Similar to the article. I don't know where I'd seen this a while back, but someone had proposed a fee for uploading your book to these e-publishers, whether it's Kindle or Nook or iBooks. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, you can't do that. It was my first reaction. You can't do that. You have to make it accessible to everyone. Then I thought, what if there was more of a barrier to entry? Because I've been a businessman probably my entire life at this point, but nothing comes for free. Nothing worthwhile comes for free. So to have such an easy entry into publishing a book, is that putting more crap out there? Is that putting more anti-Semitic stuff that may not ever sell out there because it's free and easy to put it out there? Is piracy, not piracy, but let's say, I mean, I can go to Amazon, download a book for 99 cents, copy it into Microsoft Word, do a word replace and change all the thes to thys, put it back out there with a new cover and sell it because it doesn't cost me anything. If there was a barrier to entry, could that change what's out there? Would that reduce the amount of crap and amount of offensive stuff? If it was $100 to upload a book, $500, $5? I had seen it a couple months ago, and it was just an idea thrown out there, and I thought, a very interesting idea.
I think I'd heard it wasn't that idea, but I'd heard something similar where, what was it? Basically, that Amazon, if you were caught pirating, or if you were caught, you know, doing something bad and basically not following their guidelines, they could kind of fine you.
Mm-hmm.
Where they would, you know, they would take, you know, they would fine you $200 or whatever. Just kind of different, I don't know. Just different ways to kind of, because there really is no regulation whatsoever. They have their guidelines, but people aren't going to follow those guidelines. I mean, that's the one thing, I guess, that Smashwords does do well, I guess, with their meat grinder. I guess, supposedly, they can tell if something is, you know, not appropriate. Mm. But, yeah, with Amazon, no. There really is, you know, it's just a free-for-all. And, you know, when I think people, when inappropriate stuff is brought to Amazon's attention, they do a pretty good job of getting rid of it. But it's not like, you know, they can't sit there all day and just go through stuff and, you know, double check stuff. That's just impossible.
Although every now and then I have gotten an email from them saying, we found a typo in your book. And I thought, not bad.
Wow. See, I never get that because I don't have any typos, apparently. So, actually, then you mentioned the whole 99 cent, you know, this 99 cent ebooks, which, again, ebook pricing is all the rage nowadays between among writers and really readers, too, because it really does affect, you know, how readers find our work, because you want to find that that sweet spot. Your books, for the most part, the first book in your trilogy is $2.99. And then, what was it, the second book is $4.95, and the third book is $4.95. So you do have that increase. I thought I saw like a week or two ago, did you have one of your books at $3.33?
I change pricing every couple of weeks to see what might stick out there. I mean, that's one of the wonderful things about being a self-published author. You can change your price on the fly. I normally have book one at $3.99. Book two and three at $4.99 each. And that's my idea of a little bit less for the first book to get people into the series. But not 99 cents. I'm not a big fan of the 99 cents. Yes, I was $3.33 and $4.44 and $88 for the complete trilogy, hoping that would catch someone's eye. And my mentality behind that is that I think there has been a sentiment out there among readers that see the 0.99 and 2.99 as the magic self-published numbers,
right?
And the self-published still has that stigma, and I think there's that price versus value relationship people look at also and say, $2.99 sounds like the self-published number, $3.99 doesn't, $3.33 doesn't, $3.49 doesn't. So I don't think, and I've done many, many experiments, that $2.99 to $3.99, you know, the daily sales don't change that much.
I don't see much difference between $2.99 and $3.99 either now. And actually, I've noticed that a lot more writers are starting to jump to the $3.99 price point. I know Blake Crouch and Brett Battles have done so. I'm actually starting to now. A lot of my, again, because of the host Sony store mix-up, you know, I'm kind of stuck right now with some of those prices. But, yeah, I've noticed a lot of people are starting to go to the $3.99 price point as kind of their lower price.
Well, there's a very interesting blog out there by Edward Robertson. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but over the past, probably since March, he's been doing some studies on the Amazon algorithms, and apparently they made a big change in March and another one in May. And it seems as though, and I think Dean Wesley Smith touched on this, that the higher priced books are being weighted better, and the lower price, whether it's 99 cents or the $0 select books, are not counting as much towards rankings. So selling 100 books at 99¢ is not helping your ranking as much as selling 100 books at $4.99. And Amazon, from a business standpoint, and this makes a lot of sense to me, would want to have those higher priced books show up more in the searches because they make more money. I think there might be a shift that Amazon is doing away from the lower priced books. And it seems as though, and I think it's edwardrobertson.com, might be his blog. We can check it out after. Put a link in the
Put a link in.
But it's he did an excellent study of 4 or 5 different parts on it, showing rankings for books based on price and how they show in searches. And it seems as though the higher the price, the better it's doing. And I think that's part of the shift away from the lower price books as well. Is that when I have done $2.99 and then put it on sale for 99¢, I have never, ever, ever sold 6 times as many books at 99¢ as I have at $2.99. And that's the royalty rate right there, that it's 6 times the amount of royalty at $2.99 that you make with 99¢. I've never, ever done 6 times as many. So I'm a big fan of the slightly increased book prices, and I think it keeps us out of that bargain bin.
Well, then let's talk about the whole Dean Wesley Smith. He recently had that a blog post, and really anybody, I guess, all self-published authors, one of the must-read blogs, along with the Joe Conrath the various ones, is Dean Wesley Smith and his wife, Chris Rush. They're basically going on about the whole book pricing. Again, I always hear this thing that a cup of coffee at Starbucks is $5 and takes you about 15 minutes to drink that cup of coffee. So if you have a short story that's going to take you 15 minutes to read, why not charge the same? And I think that's kind of crazy.
I see where that's coming from, but I don't think it's completely accurate because everything is relative. Everything is going to be relative. And if I can get a cup of coffee at Starbucks for $5, I don't think that equates to a short story at $5, because I think there is an expectation that people know a Starbucks coffee costs $5. People don't want to spend $5 on a short story because that's not how it's been presented. And I think it's going to be a long time till that changes. I also had seen something where people were basing their book prices on how long it took them to write it and what hourly wage would they like to make on it. And I think that was a very poor way of looking at that, because you just can't do that math. But with the cup of coffee, I don't think it's an accurate relationship there, because everything is relative. You can get a lower price coffee somewhere else. You can get a lower price book somewhere else, but I don't think the people that buy books see it that way just yet. Maybe in the future they will.
And my main question is, and I had Googled this earlier, and I didn't really I guess I could have put more effort into the Google search, but when Starbucks initially was created and they had the stores and whatever else, how much were they charging for their coffee then?
That's a good question. When they had to break into the market?
Yeah, when they were breaking the market. I can't imagine they started this company, Starbucks, and they're like, okay, we're going to charge $5 for a cup of coffee. They probably would have been laughed at of town, because everyone has to kind of start small and you work your way up.
It could have been a few years, just like it is with the ebooks, I suppose. But it's a very good point.
So, I mean, if you think about it, Starbucks, you know, you'd have like a Stephen King or a James Patterson. They're kind of the Starbucks, where they can charge $5 for a short story. In fact, Stephen King does for several of his Kindle singles or whatever else. I mean, I believe now they're like $3.99 a pop. He can command that because he's Stephen King. But for writers like us, writers who are trying to break in and grow a readership, I guess we have to really come from the reader perspective. How much are they willing to pay on an author they have never heard of before?
I think that was you said sweet spot earlier in this, and I think that's the hardest thing to find, because I don't know, even as a brand new book out there, I'd want to put it out there at 99¢, maybe as a first few days to reward my regular fans and let them all know. Not reward, I shouldn't say reward. How condescending was that?
Well, real quick, I just want to kind of jump in here. I'm not talking about novels so much. I'm talking more, and I guess I had taken the post at Dean's website more as short stories. I'm talking about a story that's probably like less than 10,000 words. Because, granted, for a novel, yeah, you know, definitely over $2.99, you know, $3.99, $4.99, you know, that's definitely very, very reasonable, of course. But for a short story that's like 5,000 words, that's like a 6,000-word short story, even like a 3,000-word short story, I don't know. I would find a hard time trying to, like, price that more than, you know, a buck. I don't know.
I strongly agree. I've got three short stories out, two of which are about 2,000 words, and the third one is just under 4,000 words. And I put them out right away at 99 cents. I can't bring myself to charge more than that. And I actually have two out of the three have been price matched down to zero as freebies, just because it is my creation. It is my work. But I got to be honest, those two 2,000 word short stories, I wrote them in less than an hour. I can't even bring myself to charge for it, because I just want to put something out there that gets my name out there, that helps my brand. And, you know, from a business person standpoint, I do have links on the end of the each one of those short stories that says, you know, I have other works out there. I would hope every self-published author does that. But again, the price wise, yeah, what he talks about, he's got 100 books published, so it's a little bit different perspective than you and I doing it. And I think you're right with the Stephen King analogy, in that he can charge essentially whatever he wants because he's Stephen King. We got a little bit different of a hill to climb.
And quite honestly, I would not mind trying to charge, you know, if you have a novelette type length, or say, you know, a 12,000 word short story, charging $1.99, I think, would probably be a decent price. But at the same time, if you're going to charge $1.99, why not just go for the $2.99 price point and get the 70% royalties? But that is $2.99 too much.
You're right. I mean, my novella, which would be about 23,000 words, I would price that at $2.99. I wouldn't go any lower than that. It's a complete story. It's just a third the size of a regular novel. Is it a third of the price? No, I don't think it is, because it's still a story, a complete story. It's not a short story. It's, you know, it's a novella. It's 20-something thousand words.
And I'm actually looking at that right now. It's called Gabriel 0 Point. And the digital price is $2.99, but you said you have it price matched right now, so it is free. How's that doing for you?
It's doing pretty well. It's actually it's second in my sales rank, behind my 2,000-word horror short story, which you should take a look at and give me a little critique on that. I did a little horror short last year just for fun, and ended up putting it out there. But the prequel is doing pretty well. It's actually, it goes back in time a little bit from my standard trilogy. It was written fourth, but it takes place first, just as an introduction to the main character that tells people how he got where he was, starting as a military recruit and sort of leading into what book one does. And it's doing pretty well. I have it price matched down to free because I want to draw people into the trilogy, and I don't think I'm going to leave it free forever. Probably go back to $2.99 sometime in the near future, but just wanted to put it out there. It's been free for, I think, since the end of May, but it's doing pretty well. It's not doing great, I'll be honest, because the whole KDP Select thing has really changed what a free book can do.
Yeah, it certainly has. I remember back when you know, everything was free at the beginning of the year, I downloaded my fair share, and I can't even really remember the last time I downloaded a free book.
Yeah, I know. And it's the shame of it is that so many people downloaded so many free books and will never read them. I've had, and you and I talked about some numbers before, and when your book was free, if your book was free back in February, you were getting 2,000 to 3,000 downloads per day.
Yeah, it depended on the ranking at the time.
Depending on the ranking and depending on the genre as well. This one that's been free all of June just broke 1,000 downloads. It's such a different market now, and I think it's because Amazon weights that free book so differently, and I think the KDP Select program has just about collapsed, what I'm seeing out there.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that today. I was actually entering in my I have a spreadsheet where I keep track of all my sales throughout the year, and my one free book that I have price matched, it was basically just like a zombie short story that goes to my zombie novel that I have free. I'm trying to find it here. It's called In the Land of the Blind, and at the beginning of the year, in January, there was like 14, you know, almost 1,500 downloads. And then in February, there was 1,300. In March, there was 2,100. And then in April, 900. Last month, 800. So, yeah, there's definitely been this huge drop-off.
And it used to be that when your book came off of free, you got such a huge bump with the KDP Select program, and now that bump is completely non-existent from what I'm reading.
Yeah, I saw actually, and I remember last week, I believe, Brett Battles, one of his books was in like the top five in the free books. And when it came off of free, I was kind of keeping an eye on it. And I think it got up to maybe 500 a ranking. So, yeah, I mean, it's not an exact science anymore. Because before, you're right, if you had a book that got up into the top 100 and it was, had so many downloads, it was almost guaranteed that it might be able to pop back up there in the paid top 100. But it is not the case anymore.
Not anymore. I'm imagining Amazon's going to be changing something with the program because the benefits simply aren't there. I mean, I don't think they were fully there back in December, January, except for the whole freebie thing. But, with the way that it's been so de-emphasized, the free books and the cheap books, I'd be curious to see what they do with that program.
You want to talk a little bit about the whole trilogy?
The trilogy, it's funny because the original book was not meant to be a trilogy. And the original book was written during National Novel Writing Month at the end of 2010. And I wrote it, I just had this discussion with my family the other day. I wrote it as a challenge to myself because I just turned 40 and I swore that I would have written a book by 40 and I missed that. But I decided to change that and wrote the book when I was 40. And I wrote it for my kids. I wanted them to enjoy the story. Actually, I left out all the normal military curse words. I had to go back and put them in when I decided to publish. So I wrote it for the kids. And then when I put it out there over the next couple of months, I got really good feedback and a lot of questions asked about, what's next. So I decided to do a second and then a third, and they both came out. Actually, all three books would have come out in the calendar year 2011. It's a military science fiction story. I call it near future science fiction, that the locations and the technology are very familiar to most people. That's the kind of science fiction I like to read. It's more accessible to more people. The stories that are set on other worlds and tens of thousands of years in the future aren't as accessible to people that would read techno thrillers or thrillers or Tom Clancy or Clive Cussler. The people that read those type of books could read mine. So it's military science fiction, and it follows one character and his team throughout the story arc. And then the prequel goes back and talks about that main character prior to him becoming who he was. So a little bit of adventure, some really cool technology, and some good character development. The first book, I'll admit, didn't have a lot of character development because it was a shorter one than the other two. That's another reason why the price is a little bit different. The first book is about 67,000 words, and the other two are over 80,000 words. So a little more when you get into the meat of it later on.
Very, very cool. And I guess, did we want to do some kind of giveaway here? Well, is there something you'd like to give away?
I have a complete collection, all three in one. It's called Gabriel's Journey. And just last month, I added in the prequel to that. So that Gabriel's Journey is one volume, and it has all four stories in it. So that puts it right around 250,000 words.
Wow.
So if we want to do a giveaway, let's do a copy of that, EPUB or MOBI, whatever people would prefer. I'll be happy to give away.
All right, and let's just... if you want to win a copy of Gabriel's Journey, how about you just say so in the comments. Just say, I want a copy of Gabriel's Journey. And I don't know, let's say by Monday midnight, by next week, Monday midnight, Eastern time, we'll pick a winner and we'll let them know. And then Steve will send you a copy of Gabriel's Journey. So what can readers of Steve Umstead expect next?
Great segue. Right now, I've just started on a new project. I'm about three chapters in. I've got a skeleton of an outline. I just actually did a blog post last week, but I just figured out my hook, my zing that's going to end that story. It will be science fiction. It will not be in the same universe as the Gabriel trilogy. It's different characters, different world. But it will be a more down-to-earth... Oh, bad pun. not necessarily down to earth, but a little bit more mainstream type of writing that happens to take place in a different timeline or a different planet. It's going to be a little bit more of a, not necessarily a police procedural, but the main character is an investigator. Like I said, I've got the hook, I've got the plan, I've got the outline. I've got about three chapters into it. The day job has been quite crazy over the past couple of weeks, but I'm hoping to spend a decent amount of my summer putting some words down, and maybe by the end of the summer, early fall, I can get that out there. So that's my new work in progress. With any luck, if the writing gods smile upon me, I can have that out by Labor Day.
Very, very excellent. Thank you, Steve, for talking for a bit, taking some time out of your busy schedule. Again, folks, if you want to win a copy of Gabriel's Journey, just say so in the comments section. We'll pick a winner by Monday midnight Eastern time. And Gabriel, 0 point, is free right now at Kindle. So be sure to at least download that, and definitely check out all of Steve's books. Steve, thank you for being on the program.
Excellent, Robert. Really appreciate the time.
All right, folks, and that's it for now. I guess we'll see you next time.